From WYPR in Baltimore, this is Midday. I'm Aaron Henkin in for Sheila Cast. Here's a hypothetical for you. You're walking down the street and you see a woman standing there crying. What do you do? Ask her if she's okay? Try and comfort her? Now, what if that person standing there crying is a man? Is your reaction the same? Our guest this hour is a guy who cries. He cries without shame, in public, and when it happens, he'll look you in the eye and you will look away before he does. Andrew Reiner is a Towson University professor. He teaches a class on masculinity. And he wrote an article for the Washington Post titled, "The Tracks of My Tears, One Man's Quest to Have Male Crying Be Socially Acceptable." It made him a lightning rod for some vitriolic backlash, but he welcomes the debate. A conversation about men and emotional honesty, right after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday. I'm Aaron Henkin, in for Sheila Cast, here on your public radio, WYPR. Midday is your daily live public affairs program, listeners. It's made possible by you, and I can tell you the producers of this program come into work here every day with that fact foremost in their minds. You always hear us asking for your pledge. Not today. Today, here at the top of the hour, a simple rededication of our pledge to you. Midday is your show, Baltimore, your show, Frederick, your show, Ocean City, and points between, and your voices are most welcome on this program. I'm going to give you the number to call here before we even get started, because I suspect that today's conversation is going to inspire some passionate responses. The number to call, here we go, 410-662-8780. That's 410-662-8780. What you're about to hear might make you reevaluate some fundamental assumptions. It might make you chuckle. It might make you want to tear your hair out. It's definitely food for thought. The number again, 410-662-8780. Our guest this hour is a gentleman by the name of Andrew Reiner. He teaches writing and cultural studies in the Honors College and English Department at Towson University. One of his recent courses was an Honors College course seminar. It was called Real Men Smile, The Changing Face of Masculinity. Andrew Reiner is also a guy who cries. He cries freely, he cries in public, he cries without reservation, and he doesn't mind you looking at him while he's doing it. Andrew, welcome to Midday.
Thank you, Aaron. It's great to be here. I'm crying right now.
How are you feeling today? Are you okay?
I'm not crying yet.
Look at that. I'm being glib already. And that is, in fact, kind of a symptom of the problem that you and I are going to take on this hour. I want to start, Andrew, by asking you to tell us a story, a true story that happened to you a few years ago. You were on an airplane and you were reading a book.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So I was coming back on a flight from Lake Tahoe. It was actually quite a while ago, and at the time, I was I'd spent about a week with a girlfriend at the time, and her family out in Lake Tahoe, and we were flying back, and so the backstory of this is that it was one of these situations where you kind of realize where the relationship, you know, after being with this person's family, just may not actually work out after all, despite a lot of the talk. You know, when you spend a lot of time with somebody's family, it's, you know, it can be a game changer. So we're flying back on the flight. It's a pretty long flight from California, of course. And so I'm reading this book, A River Runs Through It. And I come to this part where in the book where the there's this really kind of powerful moment that has to do with the main character and his brother. They're very, very close. The brother dies. One of the brothers who's had a troubled young adulthood dies. And I just start erupting. You know, I feel it's starting to come up. And I actually hadn't cried probably since I was about 10 or 11 years old. And at the time, I was in my late 20s. And so it was kind of this, at first, this kind of sensation, and I didn't know exactly what it was. And so it just starts coming up. And there's this kind of split second, if even that much, where just before you're about, you know, you start to get the sensation of crying, when that's when you realize what it is. What am I going to do with this? You know, am I going to stifle it? Or am I going to let this go? Well, you know, the culture we live in, I mean, even for women, that's usually not acceptable, to be crying in public, typically. So I just kind of let it go, you know, and I just let it go. And there was also a little bit of fear.
You're not talking about like a quiet tear streaming out of the corner of your eye. I mean, like, you were full on having like a mournful sob on this airplane.
Yeah, I was definitely sobbing. Absolutely. I was sobbing, and I wasn't holding back either. I just kind of let it go. I just went with it, completely went with it. And
so what happened? I mean, like, what did the people around you start doing? What did your girlfriend do?
So
she's
right.
Sitting next to you in the airplane.
Right. Good question.
After a not such a great weekend.
That's right.
A week with her parents.
That's right. So she is looking out the window, and she will not turn to me. And I knew enough about her kind of nonverbals at the time, her nonverbal cues, to know that she was very uncomfortable. So she's looking out the window, and I can see her from the corner of my eye looking out the window, and she's just kind of staring. The gentleman next to me, there was a gentleman next to me, looked to be probably a, looked, he was dressed like a business person. And he is just staring ahead, and I look down at the armrest, and he is like white knuckling his armrest, and he is just staring ahead, you know, because I did kind of turn to him for a second, and he just, you know, I guess I can understand, just didn't want any part of it.
Pretend this guy isn't here.
Yes.
Pretend this guy isn't here.
Uh-huh. That's right. Yeah, very much so, because I literally did look down at the armrest, and his hands, he was white knuckling his armrest. Mm. And so people are starting to turn. You know, children are looking, men and women start looking a little bit.
And what's going through you? Are you like, oh my God, I'm really embarrassed, I've got to stop doing this? Or were you, you were having a transformative moment.
It really was. And at first what I thought was, this is really kind of an interesting, this was a very authentic experience. But there was a part of me after a few moments, after this started happening, and I'm noticing of how people are reacting, there was a thought in the back of my mind that, wow, this is really interesting. What's going on here? And because I wasn't really, you know, I wasn't really sure what was going to happen with the relationship. And there was that trigger with just the story, and it just really hitting me, and on the heels of, you know, some possible realization about the relationship. But it wasn't as if she had said to me, oh, well, our relationship is over. You know, it was just kind of a kind of mounting kind of, you know, sadness and fear. And then the book, you know, what happens in the book, because I used to be very, very close with my brother, triggers this. And so for that moment, there is kind of this awareness, because I'm not like terribly grieving. It's just like, wow, this is really interesting. You know, now that this is out and there's still tears streaming down my face, this is really interesting. And at some point, an attendant comes up and says, sir, you know, are you okay? And, you know, what can I get for you? Can I, you know, and she's handing me, you know, tissues. And I said, no, I don't want them. Thank you. And I didn't really know why at the time. You know, I mean, because none of this was obviously planned, but I just said, no, thank you. You know, I just, you know, this was kind of like, after a while, it started to feel like kind of like a saline war paint that I had on. Huh. And I just decided that I was just going to go with this.
So the plane lands, you get your luggage, life goes on, but you've had, this was a crucible for you. You hadn't cried for 19 years. But it wouldn't be another 19 years before tears were flowing again, and you were sort of putting this together in kind of a socio-political way in your head.
Very much so. That's right. That's right. And in fact, what happened when we got off the plane and we were walking to get to baggage, my girlfriend at the time still wouldn't look at me. And the responses, when I asked her, you know, what's going on for you? She just said, you know, nothing. But she, at one point, she did say, you know, what was that all about? At one point, and she would not look at me. She just kept looking ahead, and she said, you know, what was that all about? and I said to her, you know, I don't think I said anything about what had happened in terms of the week, because there wasn't really any kind of defining thing. It was just kind of cumulative of just kind of feeling like this may not work out, but I'm not really sure. But I said, you know, that book just really touched me. And I said, you know, she knew that I was very close with my brother, and I said, the idea of having something similar where, like, I lose my brother is just, it was a very painful thing to think about. I'd never really thought about it at that point. And that was kind of it, you know, and there was definitely some distance there for the rest of the day.
So let me fast forward to the present and talk to you about your work as a professor in front of students at Towson University, specifically in this class about masculinity. What is the class? What is your goal with the class?
Well, I do want to dovetail, because I really didn't answer your last question, so I'll dovetail that with the answer. Excuse me. So it very much after that did become kind of a sociopolitical act for me. I realized that later. And so I wanted to create this course that delved primarily into the idea at first of creating an awareness of the fact that men need some type of outlet for emotional vulnerability. At the very least, just a kind of conversation, discussion, awareness of the deeper feelings, the other feelings that get lost day in and day out. Because one of the things in the early stages of the course that I really was very much aware of was that the range of human emotions that typically we don't afford men are everything except for anger, really. Joy, sadness, anything that is part of the spectrum outside of anger, just really we don't really encourage or afford a lot of young men and men the same thing. And we start to really kind of cut it off for boys at a certain age. And so I was hoping the class would be filled with a lot of young men and that we would start to explore these things. Over the course of time, as I've taught the class, between, research, just a lot of reading I've been doing and some kind of writing I've been doing and from mostly from conversations I have with the students, it's really started to evolve, which is ideal, because really the class is very much a dialogue, with all of us. And it's, I don't care how corny this sounds. I get as much out of it as they do, sometimes even more. And it very much was in the early stages about talking about the fact that men do have these other emotions and why is it that we don't afford them the opportunity to show the full range of their humanity.
You cried in front of your class on the first day of a class, if I remember hearing about that or reading about that. It might not be this masculinity class, but you were in front of a class. Tell that story.
Right. So there was an honors college freshman orientation. And it was a couple years ago in August. And the entire incoming freshman class for the honors college at Towson was sitting there. And there must have been, 250 of them, 300 of them. And so each year somebody gets up and gives kind of leads a discussion on a book that they were supposed to read over the summer. The book they were supposed to read was about, it was called The Cellist of Sarajevo. And I may, if that's not the title, it's something along those lines. And it's basically about, it's based on actual events, even though it's a novel. What I was so taken with in this story, the part that was completely true, was that one of the characters, who's a minor character, goes out every day in the ruins as Sarajevo is being bombed during the Bosnian conflict of the early to mid-90s. And it's based on a real character who goes out every day in the ruins at a certain time. He was a concert cellist, now out of work, wears his tails, sits beneath the rubble while the city's being bombed, and he plays. And the concept of that was staggering to me. I couldn't wrap my mind around it. And so I get up to lead this discussion. I mean, I'm getting chills just talking about it now. I get up to lead this discussion, and there's a slide up that I had of him, the actual real life, and I apologize, I forgot his name, but he was, he's sitting there, and there's a photograph of him that somebody from, you know, some journalist had taken of him playing, you know, in the ruins and the rubble. And I just, before I even started talking, I was already getting choked up. And I started talking about what a real life hero is, you know, and I started talking about that. And then, you know, I just kind of like motioned to the screen, and I just started crying. And I said, you know, I said, I'm not going to apologize for crying. I said, if this makes you uncomfortable, I'm sorry, you know, I'm a little bit sorry for that. And part of me isn't. I said, because, you know, these are the kinds of things that hopefully we'll explore in the Honors College that really matter. And that I want this education when you come here at Towson to mean more than just, you know, spitting back what a lot of professors want, getting in, getting out, going through the motions. You know, I want this to count for something. This is about, you know, what a real liberal arts education should be, where there's the, you know, the melding of the heart and the mind. And so I was just kind of going on as I'm crying. And you know, of course, there's just, you know, hundreds of eyes just looking like deer in headlights. But the really cool thing, Aaron, was that some of them started to nod. Some of them kind of started nodding and kind of smiling a little bit. And I thought, this was worth it.
The cellist's name, our producers have helped us out. Now I'm not going to be able to pronounce it, though. Vedran Smilovic. So there you go.
Thank you for that.
So, wow, a memorable orientation session.
Indeed.
You're tuned to Midday here on WYPR. I'm Aaron Henkin in for Sheila Cast. We're talking this hour with Towson University professor Andrew Reiner. We're talking about masculinity, emotional honesty, whether or not those two things are in any way compatible. Listeners, what do you think? Men, women, we're interested in hearing from you both. When was the last time you cried? Were you embarrassed? Are tears for the weak, or are we turning our sadness into something worse when we hold back those tears? Join the conversation. The number to call, 410-662-8780, or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Going to take a quick break, and we'll be back shortly. I'm Aaron Henkin. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. Aaron Henkin here for Sheila Cast. Question for you. When was the last time you cried? When was the last time you cried in front of someone else? Men and women, we're curious to hear from you both at 410-662-8780. I think it'll be interesting to hear what your stories have to tell us about emotional honesty and also about the construct of masculinity. The number again, 410-662-8780. Our guest this hour is Andrew Reiner. He teaches writing and cultural studies in the Honors College and English Department at Towson University. One of his recent courses was an Honors College seminar called Real Men Smile, The Changing Face of Masculinity. And among his recent articles, one for the Washington Post titled The Tracks of My Tears, One Man's Quest to Have Male Crying Be Socially Acceptable. We've got calls coming in, Andrew. I want to get to those shortly, but I want to first pick up where we left off and give you a chance to talk about where this college seminar course of yours has gone about masculinity with your students. I mean, you started this thing from scratch, didn't know where it was going to go. You've got an entire new, younger generation of college-age men in this class. What's it been like?
It's, you know, it's been the kind of underlying kind of, you know, what's been really girding it has been this idea of the raising this question of, you know, this compatibility, is it compatible in terms of masculinity and vulnerability? But it's also been really kind of developing in terms of of what role, to what extent, what role young women and women, you know, the females in our lives, to what role that they play in this. And because we've been talking a lot about that, and we've also been looking at in terms of masculinity, in terms of not just with, you know, white males in America, but with African American males, with, you know, Latino males, with Arab American males, Asian American males. So it's been really kind of, you know, starting to branch and this kind of looking at what are the common threads and where do some races and ethnicities kind of diverge a little bit from what we think of as kind of like the quote unquote mainstream, you know, kind of hyper masculine ideal. But it's also been, you know, it also gets a bit sticky when we talk about how and if women contribute to this kind of script also.
There's also the generational factor of you're talking to, you know, young men that I'm going to guess that you and I are about the same age, you know, which is about 20, 30 years older than these college age kids.
That's right.
Young men. And they're growing up in this age of social media and an entire, you know, sort of subsidiary social environment that we, you know, that is relatively new to us. We'll get to that, I promise.
Yeah.
Social media, which is another interesting area of study for you. You teach classes on intimacy in the age of Facebook.
Right.
Perhaps a discussion for later in this program or another day.
Yeah.
But I do want to get to the phones. Listeners are calling in with their stories, their thoughts for us. And we'll go first to Lorenzo in Baltimore. Lorenzo, you're on Midday.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
So first of all, I'm a crier from a family of criers. Just about every guy in my family cries, my brothers. I got a famous picture that sits in the house of me at the graduation with my two sons, and all of us have tears in our eyes, and we are all as masculine as you could ever think about. My wife knows I cry at movies. I cry at happy times. I just had a granddaughter. I'm going to tear up whenever I talk or see her. Any woman I've ever dated, when I'm at a movie with them, and a real sad, sensitive part comes, they look over at me because they know there's going to be tears coming down, and they always just smile and say, "Oh, isn't that cute?" So I don't really, you know, I don't think there's any less masculine that it's not masculine to cry. I think actually, you know, crying it just releases the emotion and it helps me move on. I could be driving down the road listening to something on the radio and probably listening to your station and hear something come on, and I'm going, man, my goodness, and it just brings tears to my eyes. It doesn't bother me at all. However, I mean, to compare that, in my opinion, to me just breaking down and just bawling like crazy in the, you know, in the middle of on a plane or in a public place, or I mean, that to me, you know, that almost sounds like depression to me. It sounds like, you know, the beginnings of depression. I mean, even if I understand the gentleman's point where he says, well, he hadn't let his emotions out for 19 years, and maybe, boom, they all came, you know, come rushing out of him at the time he read that part in the book. You know, I can understand getting emotional about it, but, you know, to be uncontrollable, which is what it sounded like to me, and if I'm wrong, please correct me, but to be uncontrollable, that is not normal social behavior, in my opinion. And I'll take your response off the air.
Thanks so much, Lorenzo. Andrew Reiner, I'll let you respond to that. Lorenzo says, hey, you know, I'm a guy, I'm a masculine guy. I cry, though, at movies. I cry at graduations, funerals. I cry when I think about my children, grandchildren. But what you did on an airplane, that crosses the line.
Right. So first of all, I just want to say I was really very impressed with what Lorenzo was saying and what he's very comfortable with and the men in his family with doing. I thought that was really applaudable. And I'm glad he's kind of, you know, kind of challenging this whole notion of in terms of crying on a spectrum and what's acceptable and what's not. I take a global view on this. You know, my feeling is not just me, but anybody. You know, it's. I think we get into a slippery slope where we say some kind of crying is acceptable publicly and some is not. The problem, you know, the problem is whether somebody is depressed or not. And at the time, not that I feel like it even matters if I was. I wasn't at all. That wasn't really it at all. But, you know, our lives, our public and private lives, you know, they mesh, and we can't always control. We don't always have the luxury of control. We're ducking out and hiding when we're in public and things occur. And for people who are sensitive and deeply feeling people, there's more of that possibility that something might come up that really touches you. And I'm a big believer in just that we do ourselves and our children a huge disservice when, not that we don't set boundaries, but that when it comes to something like genuine emotion of expressing that, that should be allowable. I mean, a good example is, you know, you flip it around and say, let's talk about degrees of anger, you know, or let's talk about degrees of joy, which is not threatening at all. You know, I mean, you know, we don't say to people, okay, well, you can show certain degrees of joy, but you've got to really kind of dial it back if you're too happy. Now, some people might say that, but a lot of people would say, no, joy is great. As Lorenzo himself said, crying is a biological, very natural thing. And I think that we limit ourselves as humans, you know, if we say that, okay, well, certain kinds of crying is acceptable, but then you've got to really kind of, you know, dial back the fact that you're feeling something very strongly.
We perceive it as a relinquishing of our own control over our emotions, though, crying. Not so much an emotion as a losing control of your emotions. And it seems, I think, that one of the issues around it is that there's an association, obviously, between crying and vulnerability.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think... you know, masculinity and vulnerability, you know, how do you justify those two things? 410-662-8780, the number to call to join our conversation here with Andrew Reiner. We go back to the phones now and hear from Tim in Cockeysville. Tim, you're on the air.
Hey, I really appreciate you guys doing this show. First of all, Lorenzo, great points, bud. I really appreciate his defiance, and I think it's exactly how more men need to treat their vulnerability. Unfortunately, it seems like a lot of society, men and women, don't want vulnerable males. They don't want sensitive men. And they don't want men expressing those negative emotions. The lesson I've been taught all my life is you deal with that somewhere else, not where anybody can see it, not with other people. And I think that we need to see more male vulnerability. I would like to see men addressing this in a way that is uniquely masculine. I would like to see a new recognition of a type of vulnerability that is specifically male, but I'm not sure what that'll look like yet. But I think Lorenzo might be onto something, and I really liked how he was describing that. There's also been a lot of talk of this online. You might want to look into Men Going Their Own Way or the men's rights community. Those two groups talk a lot about male vulnerability. And I'll take my response off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Andrew, your thoughts?
I guess one of the things that was kind of coming up for me as I was listening, thank you for that, Tim, is that, and I guess it's really kind of a tag on to what I was saying before. I think that... when we have boys, especially, and young men who, you know, brain imaging studies have shown that, you know, we know about young children, but even with young men, that they're very concrete thinkers. Things are very binary in their minds in terms of, you know, it's very black and white. And when we, if we, you know, if we are showing boys and young men that, you know, there's very limited kind of degrees of crying that are acceptable, they're not looking at that and thinking in their brains, okay, well, certain kind of crying is acceptable and I can wrap my mind around the complexity of what that means because it's completely ambiguous. They're looking at it and still saying, well, okay, well, I can cry just a little bit, but I can't cry a lot. And you know, boys and young men, it's very much a binary for them. And it's, I think it sets them up for the larger message of our culture, which is that you don't show that kind of vulnerability if you're a guy. It's a variance that's very difficult for boys and young men to really kind of, you know, parse apart. Tim brought up the point about this kind of new form of masculinity. And I guess, you know, I'd really like to push that envelope a little bit further, even from where he and Lorenzo were talking. What does that mean? You know, what does it mean to say that, you know, there's a kind of masculinity that where there can be degrees of vulnerability? One of the things that I ask my students a lot is, you know, what is so awful if we afford the same emotions and the same degree of acceptance of those emotions in men that we show in women, because the script is very different. So what would be, if we take that a step further, excuse me, what would it look like, and what would be so awful if men were given the same free rein to the extent that they wanted it in terms of their emotion without there being this just kind of draconian judgment?
You're tuned to Midday here on WYPR. I'm Aaron Henkin in for Sheila Cast. We're talking this hour with Towson University professor Andrew Reiner. And listeners, we welcome your thoughts, your stories, your experiences at 410-662-8780. What do you think, men and women? We want to hear from you both. What did your parents tell you when you were a kid and you cried? Are you a parent now? What do you tell your kids? Is what you tell your son different than what you say to your daughter? Why? Why not? Join the conversation at 410-662-8780. And we'll go next to Harry in Baltimore. Harry, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you today?
Very good, thanks. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to preface my statements by saying that I've had the good fortune of interacting with Professor Reiner on multiple occasions, and just wanted to compliment him and articulate that he's a very good man, and whatever accolades that he has earned, he certainly has achieved those and is well-deserving. I wanted to share a incident when I was in graduate school years ago. And for those of individuals in the listening audience, when I'm sure are familiar, if not, when you're in grad school, you typically go through the coursework, and then you take the comprehensive examination, and then you either write a thesis or in a doctoral program, you do a dissertation. There was one particular part that I was a little bit dubious about and had a little bit of trepidation about in terms of passing the comprehensive exams. And once I received the good news that I did pass the comprehensive exam, I shared that with my dad, and he was a very, very good man, but he couldn't understand the fact that I was very emotional about the fact that I had passed. But I remember it to this day, how he couldn't understand why I was crying at the time. He couldn't understand that it was almost like a type of cleansing and relief. And I must share, it was one of the best cries that I had. But I think sometimes that people perceive crying by the male figure as a sign of weakness, when in fact, I feel it is a sign of strength.
Well said, Harry. Tears of sorrow aren't the only tears. Tears of relief, tears of joy. We're going to have to take a quick break. I apologize, but I promise we'll be right back. When we come back, more on masculinity and whether or not, as you heard Harry say, emotional vulnerability is worth the social risk. A conversation about men, a conversation for men and women. You are all welcome to join the dialogue here on Midday. The phone number, 410-662-8780. I'm Aaron Henkin, in for Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Aaron Henkin, in for Sheila Cast. This is crazy. I was Andrew Reiner, our guest this hour, Towson University professor, just told me he teaches a class on masculinity, modern masculinity, the face of masculinity. He says 75% of your students, Andrew,
every semester when I teach this seminar are women.
75% women in the class. So I bring that up only to compliment the boldness and honesty of our listeners, who we have got men calling one after another here during this hour and speaking very candidly about sort of a taboo subject, crying and emotional honesty. We return to the phones now here at 410-662-8780 to hear from Michael in Gardenville. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. I read a book about 20 years ago, so I apologize for not remembering the name of it. But the basic thesis of the book was that if you, the harder it is to survive in your culture, that has a direct correlation to how rigid sex roles are. So if it's really, because at some point men have to leave the nurturing orbit of their mother and go out and be initiated into the world of men, And so if it's harder to survive, you have to be like more of a warrior. And I would relate that to our country because we have like a shredded safety net, social safety net. And especially like an African-American person or a Hispanic person who's having trouble surviving would have more of a need to be tough. And I will take any comments off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Interesting theory there from Michael that there's sort of a social evolutionary correlation between how tough your life is and how strictly masculine your role needs to be if you're a man.
That is a fantastic point. Thank you for that, Michael. that is, I mean, to me, it's always just made all the sense in the world. I think that we're starting to get to a point with lots of research with psychology and to some extent sociology, where we're starting to, you know, to look at a lot of the factors of stress in terms of, you know, what they do to our bodies and I think when we take the kind of long view and look at, you know, what it's meant for men, I think that what happens is that, and unfortunately, I can't think of studies that's similar to what Michael's talking about that I've read before, but that, you know, that there is a connection between the expectations and men historically, you know, dying before women. There was one of my students sent me a really funny link to a comedian, and I can't remember his name right now, but he talks a lot about, it's this very, very funny clip about the kind of hyper-masculinity and the expectations, and basically what he really says is that, you know, this is why men implode at 55. I really think that we're going to start to see more research on this very topic. I think that, you know, that we're going to start to see more, especially psychologists doing studies about, you know, to what extent, if any, that the gender expectations of hypermasculinity, especially in a culture like ours, which is similar and very different from a lot of others, what way it influences, you know, the cortisol levels of stress, you know, they're caused by stress in our bodies, and to what extent day in and day out this occurs. Because the last thing I'll say about that, Aaron, is that, you know, one of the things that we've started to look at in the course I teach, and that you, I think we're hearing to some extent from our callers, is that there's a script that runs through, you know, every boy, young man, and man's mind, and they're not even aware of it most of the time, around the clock while we're awake, which is this, is that a lot of what I say and a lot of what I do is basically being scrutinized in terms of whether it's coming off as feminine or not. And it's so ingrained that most guys aren't even aware of it. But when you when you're living that way, and if you're falling prey to that kind of, you know, that kind of gravity and weight, how could that not raise the level of stress?
The idea that the construct of masculinity is in fact a pathology to some degree. I mean, what are the alternatives to emotional honesty? Binge drinking, anger outbursts, suicide, domestic violence, homicide. I don't know. Interesting theory. Listen, let's head back to the phones here at 410-662-8780 and hear from Dave in Hartford. Dave, you're on the air.
All right. Hello, this is Dave. Really quick, this is a great subject. I wish I could cry more because I know there's times that I want to and I just haven't been able to do that. It's a whole separate thing. But I have a 15-year-old sports boy. The other morning, he said his knee was hurting. My wife and I were looking at him like, really? It really hurts? You're missing school? And before he knew it, he just was sobbing at the table. And we both just sort of, like, freaked out a little bit. And I'm like, okay, what's happened? You know? So we just were like, okay, you can just take off this morning and chill out here with this. And we really sort of haven't figured out how to respond to it. You know, I found out, you know, there wasn't a girlfriend breakup. It really didn't appear to be anything except for that maybe it's just been a long winter and he's been busy and just needed to let it go. So but he's never done that before. So, you know, listening to this, I was just wondering, and I'll take anything off the air, what your suggestions are for somebody that believes this is really valuable for all the reasons that you guys are talking about to help improve this stuff in a family and household. Mm. So thanks.
Thanks, Dave. Andrew Reiner, you are a dad as well, in addition to being a professor. What do you say? Your son, I think, is probably not a teenager yet.
He's not, no.
But what is your advice to a dad who is in a situation where he is dealing with a tearful son?
Right. Let me just real quickly just preface by saying this. You know, crying is just the manifestation of something, obviously something deeper. It's the tipping point, and it's you know, really kind of the open window to say, okay, so something is going on for my child, and as children get older, and especially for young men, it's, you know, it's indicative of something that is clearly going on deeper for them. You know, I really do believe that, and I've really learned this from my wife, who is a very, very wise parent, which is that you start out, I believe that you start out by saying, you know, by if you can find out what it is at all, by basically empathy. Wow, you know, if it in fact was his knee, which it sounds like from what we just heard that maybe it wasn't, but if it was the knee, saying, you know, wow, that must really hurt what you just did. This opening up with empathy is, it sounds like so many things, so simple and so trivial, but it's so powerful, you know, because people of all of the ages, including us, there's nothing like somebody opening up with us when they see that we're struggling and saying, you look like you're having a bad day. That, you know, something is going on for you. Just opening up with that is something that is very, very empowering for the person who's in pain. And I think that if it's difficult, it's very, very, very difficult for boys and especially young men to even know how to talk about things that they're struggling with mentally or emotionally, because often they don't have the literacy in terms of how to explain it, because so many of the messages are that you're not supposed to feel this way. So crying is the open window to say, come on in and help me figure this out.
410-662-8780, the number to call to join this conversation. We'll go now to Mike in Hamden. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, I had my episode of crying in public a pretty long time ago. I was in college, so it's about 55 years ago. And you know, if you think there's problems that society has with men crying now, try the 1960s and the 1950s. And one thing you said, Aaron, just a minute ago was that, you know, attitudes of parents and things. I mean, my dad used to knock me around, and if I cried, he would call me a queer and hit me more, because only if men that cry, there's only one category for them. But when I was in college, I went to see a play, a particularly beautiful play called Carousel, and there's a point in the play where the main character, who is this man child. His wife is pregnant, and he's thinking, "Yeah, oh boy, I'm going to have a son." And then he says, in this one song, the soliloquy, he said, "Oh my God, you can have fun with a son, but you've got to be a father to a girl." And boom, tears, pow, just flew out. And the person with me said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "I didn't try to hide it or anything." I said, "Yeah, I am okay." And I, you know, thinking about it later, I thought, well, wow, I must be more secure in myself than I was giving myself credit for.
You were surprised, it sounds like, Mike, that even 55 years ago, when you had your catalyst, once the tears came, they came without shame. And that does, Andrew, sound remarkably similar to the experience that you had in more recent history on the airplane.
Yeah, very much so. And I think Mike's point, the context is really important. You know, the 55 years ago, as he said, you know, the parameters for expressing that were much, much more narrower than they are today. So, you know, that takes a lot of courage to be able to do that.
I want to go to the phones again and hear from our first female caller of the hour, calling us here from Clarksville, Myla. Am I saying your name right?
No, it's Lila, L-I-L-A.
Oh, look at that. That's what a typo will do for you. Lila. Hi, Lila.
And I'm from Parkville, Maryland.
Lila from Parkville, not Myla from Clarksville. All right. Lila from Parkville. Yeah. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So I wanted to know how these things affect women who have had to conform to a male social structure. For example, I've been in the military as active in reserve for 25 years, and I'm 52, going on 53. And what your speaker says resonates so much with me. I've had to conform the way I express emotion, the way I express my ideas and thoughts to a male way, not only for myself to be heard, but so that my troops and my people are protected, their messages get through, they get what they need. And I really resonate with, like, your speaker said something about the 55-year-old, you know, meltdown. Yeah, I'm headed in that direction. And I feel so, I am so overwhelmed sometimes with the power of my own emotion, the power of my own voice, from having to restrain it for so long.
Lila, thank you for your call. Andrew, we've got a woman raised in a male-dominated environment, very male-dominated profession, saying, you know what, I might be a victim of this pathology, if you will, myself.
What Lila's talking about, I think we haven't really heard a lot about it, but I think we'll see more of it, you know, as more and more women are pushing that glass ceiling in corporate America, you know, in the boardrooms. And as it's happening, as more and more women are going to be entering, you know, with combat for the military, we live in a very, very interesting era in terms of expectations, not just for men, but increasingly as more and more women are coming into, you know, positions of power. I think a lot of those old expectations are hanging tough, and it's kind of, you know, putting on a kind of, again, gravity that is really it's making it, I think it's making it hard for a lot of young women and women. Where you know, when I teach, I mean, every semester I have at least 3, maybe 4 students, all women, young women, who have to drop out periodically or maybe take a semester off, often because of extreme anxiety or depression. And I think that I think we're seeing a lot more of this, and we're seeing, of course, with young men. But I think that as the game is upped for a lot of young women, and as they become more competitive in these areas, I think we're going to see more of this, and hopefully that'll get the discussion going.
I want to say thank you to our guest, Andrew Reiner, professor at Towson University, for joining us. His most recent article is titled Teaching Men to Be Emotionally Honest. It was published in the New York Times earlier this month. We've got a link to that on the Midday page. My only regret this hour, we didn't get to all your calls. Thanks so much for your input, listeners, this hour. A little note about lunch. Lunch for our midday guests was provided by Dangerously Delicious Pies, with locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the Square in Canton, at 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. The menu includes homemade sweet and savory pies and quiches. Finally, thank you again, listeners, for being part of this program. It's been a pleasure to spend this time with you. Sheila Cast is going to be back tomorrow. She will ask the question, free range or pasture raised, fair trade certified or responsibly grown? The grocery store is awash in labels appealing to our conscience. Which ones are meaningful? Which ones are nonsense? Stay tuned. I'm Aaron Henkin. Have a great afternoon. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.